Radio Prague News.
An ultra-conservative citizens' initiative, DOST, has delivered an open letter of protest to official supporters of an upcoming gay rights march in Prague. President Klaus and Foreign Minister Karol Schwarzenberg have criticized a group of ambassadors for their method of supporting the march. And residents of the Šumava National Park blocked environmental activists from protesting in the forest on Monday. An ultra-conservative citizens' initiative, DOST, has delivered an open letter of protest to official supporters of an upcoming gay rights march in Prague. Initiative leader Ladislav Batora, who is also an advisor to the education minister, called upon Prague Mayor Bohuslav Sobota and American Ambassador Norman Eisen on Monday to renounce their support for the Prague Pride March, saying the protesters' demands go beyond the limits of tolerance. Mr. Batora, who once stood as an independent candidate for the now-defunct far-right National Party, also criticized the ambassador for meddling in internal affairs of the Czech Republic. Last Friday, President Václav Klaus backed comments made by his deputy chief of staff, Petr Hayek, who referred to homosexuals as deviants. On the same day, 13 ambassadors to Prague, among them those of Germany, the UK, and the United States, signed a joint letter expressing their support for the marchers. President Klaus and Foreign Minister Karl Schwarzenberg have both criticized the embassies for forming their support for the parade as a petition. In a statement published by Prague Castle on Monday, the president called the ambassador's letter an unprecedented encroachment into an internal political discussion and said they should know that the debate is not about whether or not the Prague Pride March should be allowed, but whether it should be held under the auspices of the mayor of Prague. Mr. Schwarzenberg addressed the letter on the Foreign Ministry website, where he writes that it is counterproductive and excessive for the ambassadors to support rights that no one in the Czech Republic either denies nor rejects. Also regarding Mr. Batora, an association of World War II political prisoners and their descendants has asked Prime Minister Petr Nečas to review supporters of extremist opinions in the Ministry of Education. In an open letter to the Prime Minister, the association says that available information shows Mr. Batora to be a proponent of anti-Semitism and fascism, who has consorted with neo-Nazis. A series of associations, including Amnesty International, the Czech Helsinki Committee, and Romia, have made similar complaints in recent days. Education Minister Josef Dobesh has defended his advisor, calling him a conscientious nationalist and Catholic. Batora himself says that his security clearance itself shows he is neither an extremist or a racist. Local residents of the Šumava National Park have again entered into the fray between environmental activists and loggers. A group of locals on Monday used tractors to block activists' road access to a protected zone of the forest where the park management has authorized logging in order to combat a destructive bark beetle infestation. Loggers, in the meanwhile, were able to begin work on some 5,000 trees marked for felling. Around 20 activists reached the forest later on and blocked one of the access roads. Environmentalists have been staging such protests for several weeks now, arguing that the park management does not have the needed permits to cut in the forest. A preliminary court order has, however, allowed logging to continue. Now turning briefly to the weather, conditions over the coming days are expected to be partly cloudy with scattered showers and highs of around 17 to 21 degrees Celsius. My name's Christian Falvey. That's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio, with me, Jan Richter. In today's show, controversy over Prague's first gay and lesbian pride parade escalates. Then we'll have a roundup of the latest news from the world of Czech sports. And later, we talk to Amir Barlev, an American documentary filmmaker with Czech influences.
It's sort of almost patronizing, I think, to think that, you know, documentary is the truth, or documentary is somehow more real.
All that and more coming your way, so please stay tuned. With two more days left to go before it begins, the gay and lesbian community's Prague Pride Festival has stirred up considerable controversy. The event, held under the auspices of Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda, has come under fire from public figures such as the head of the ultra-conservative civic initiative DOST, Ladislav Batora, the controversial presidential aide Petr Hájek, and even the president himself. Sara Borůvka has more.
A heated public debate around the Czech capital's first gay and lesbian parade, held as part of the five-day Prague Pride Festival, is escalating 2 days ahead of the official start of the event. On Monday, Ladislav Batora, the head of the ultra-conservative civic initiative DOST, who also runs the Education Ministry's Human Resources Department, sent a letter to Prague Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda denouncing his support of the festival. Another copy went to U.S. Ambassador Norman Eisen, one of 13 diplomats who pledged their encouragement of Prague Pride. Mayor Bohuslav Svoboda and Boris Sjastny, the head of the city's Civic Democrats chapter, have made it clear that they will not withdraw their support. This is what Mr. Sjastny had to say on the topic.
In this matter, I felt it was my personal obligation to support the mayor and his position on chauvinistic and xenophobic attitudes that are propagated by some groups of this society, and to say very clearly that Prague is an open city, a metropolis that I would like to see become even more similar to cities like Vienna, Paris, Munich, or Berlin. We do not oppose such events taking place in our city, and I see no reason why the mayor should not support Prague Pride.
Mr. Batora's protest of the Pride and Tolerance Festival follows on the heels of a statement made by presidential aide Petr Hájek, who called the parade a march of deviance. His remarks were backed by none other than President Václav Klaus, who said that deviant was a neutral term, simply referring to a behavior that is different from the norm. These comments have drawn sharp responses. A number of NGOs and civic associations have addressed Prime Minister Petr Nečas, expressing their concern over homophobic attitudes amongst government officials. Meanwhile, the organizers of Prague Pride are refusing to get drawn into what they say is a purely political debate. Czeslav Válek is the chairman of Prague Pride's board.
We don't want to get into this political discussion because clearly this is some kind of political issue within one political party, which we are not part of and we don't want to get into. What I personally take as more scary than the statements of Mr. Hájek or Batora is the endorsement by the president, because president really what he did was saying that the deviant is a neutral world. And by this saying that homosexuals are deviants, but the fact is that in the society deviant is a very pejorative word, and in this way it is taken. So for me personally, this is more threatening than the statements of Hájek or Batora.
Mr. Válek added that thanks to the remarks of both Mr. Hájek and Mr. Batora, everyone in the Czech Republic was now aware that Prague Pride 2011 was taking place, and he said he expected Saturday's parade would be a great and entertaining event.
Sara Borůvka reporting. Now, Jan Wellinger has the latest news from Czech sports.
And we begin first with tennis. 32-year-old Czech player Radek Štěpánek has won the Legg Mason Tennis Classic in Washington, his first tournament title in just under 2 years. The unseeded player defeated opponent Gael Monfils of France in straight sets. The final score was 6-4, 6-4. The singles title is the fifth in Štěpánek's career after wins in San Jose, Rotterdam, Brisbane, and Los Angeles. His trainer, Petr Korda, won the Legg Mason Classic when he was a player as well. Štěpánek is the second oldest player to ever win the championship after the legendary Jimmy Connors did it at the age of 35 back in 1988. In mountain bike racing, Yaroslav Kulhavy renewed his European title after winning in the cross-country at the European Championships in Dohňany, Slovakia at the weekend. The defending champion edged Julien Absalon of France and Switzerland's Florian Vogel by 23 seconds and 1 minute 4 seconds, respectively. After the race, here's what the champion had to say.
The win was by no means certain, especially in the first half when I was getting into my stride. I was a little tired from earlier training. You could say that the three of us were in the running throughout, and I only got the edge on Julian Absalon in the final stretch.
The Czech racer also leads on the World Cup circuit with 2,402 points this season. He has finished first 8 times, second 5 times, and third twice. Next Sunday he will race on home territory at Nové Město na Moravě. Turning to football now, and Club Sparta won the second game of the season on Sunday, making them 2-for-2 since it began on July the 31st. On Sunday evening, the Prague club defeated visitors Jablonec Letná by a score of 2-1. Sparta opened the scoring early in the 11th minute when midfielder Sionko set up Koeke. Makeyovski added a second in the 30th minute. Jablonec, who tied in their opening match, pulled within a goal after a strike by Lafata, but were unable to get another. In other action in the domestic league at the weekend, defending champions Bosang struggled to find winning form after tying in their opener. The West Bohemian club was beaten 2-1 by Bohemians 1905 at Prague's Eden Stadium. The club is in 10th spot in the standings. In other matches, Slavia lost 2-1 to Liberec, Příbram beat Viktoria Žižkov by the same score, and Sigma Olomouc beat last place Ostrava 3-0. League leaders Hradec Králové face Slovan Liberec on Monday night. And finally, in other football news, Dagmar Damková, the sole female referee working in the men's competition, was applauded at the weekend as she refereed her last match, a game between Mladá Boleslav and Slovácko. 30 colleagues from different leagues filled the stadium's VIP zone and thanked the ref for her contribution. Damková is leaving work on the pitch behind after being elected to UEFA's referees committee. As a referee, Damková worked in the top Czech football league since the 2005-2006 season and oversaw 48 matches. She also refereed at the Olympics, including the women's final in Beijing in 2008. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's all the sport for today.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Amir Barlev first presented his documentary Fighter, a film that portrays the well-known Czech emigres Jan Wiener and Arnoš Lustig, at the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival in 2008. This year, the American filmmaker, whose second film My Kid Could Paint That got caught up in a media controversy, came back to the festival as president of the documentary competition jury. Sara Borůvka met up with him between movies and asked him what first sparked his interest in film and documentaries, what his role as a jury president entailed, and when he first visited the Czech Republic.
I studied film in undergraduate, and I did my initial studies in the United States, but I did an exchange program at FAMU, the Prague Film Academy, in 1993. And it was there that I met the two subjects of my first film, Arnoš Lustig and Jan Wiener.
In 2000, your documentary about those two, Fighter, got a special jury citation here at Karlovy Vary. And since then, you've also directed My Kid Could Paint That. Both of those are documentaries. So what is it that fascinates you about the genre?
I think the genre doesn't fascinate me as much as certain subjects that I've been lucky enough to, you know, been able to tell stories about. And in the case of Jan and Arnošt, we had these larger-than-life personalities, dear friends, but very different from one another. And ultimately, it becomes a story about stories themselves. It's a story about two friends who are battling over memory and history. And then in my second film, we had this four-year-old painter who was selling $25,000 paintings. That in of itself is, I think, very interesting. And then it became alleged that her father was secretly making the paintings. So again, it became a story about stories because it became an interrogation of my relationship with them as a documentary filmmaker and the role of the press in celebrating this little girl who maybe shouldn't have been a celebrity, but her parents and all of us were kind of culpable in putting her on this pedestal. So I'm interested in stories about stories sometimes, most of the time it seems. And, you know, I learned a lot of that. I mean, a lot of the way I think is shaped from certain things that I've learned here in the Czech Republic. And also I became a fan of Czech literature and Czech cinema and Kafka and Hrabal and Kundera and all those people have a kind of a way of peeking behind the curtain of stories. So I learned it in part in the Czech Republic.
So you already mentioned that during the process of filming My Kid Could Paint That, there were some allegations concerning the authenticity of the paintings. How did that change the final film?
I think when you make documentaries, you have to learn how to improvise. And, you know, improvising doesn't mean just observe what happens and be a fly on the wall and don't get in the way and just take in everything that's happening. Improvise means you have an idea about where you're going and what you're doing, but be willing to modify that idea as reality presents surprises. So I've had to do that in all films. Maybe everybody has to do that to some degree or another. And I learned a lot about improvisation from my time as a fan of the Grateful Dead. So the greatest improviser maybe of all time in rock and roll was Jerry Garcia. And, you know, you learn from people like that, musicians and filmmakers and writers, that, you know, it's a mistake to just impose a narrative on things. You have to, you know, be open to giving and receiving in terms of story.
And how much time would you spend with the subjects of your documentaries? What kind of time span? Months? Is it months we're talking about, a year?
Well, I've made 3 films, and let me think. Each of them took 2 to 3 years to make. It doesn't happen quickly. It's a good question, and it's especially poignant for me right now, having just watched Fighter for the first time in a while, and since both of its subjects passed away in the last year. So, you know, it's an interesting thing about these documentaries is that they freeze time in a kind of a way. And, of course, time itself doesn't really stop. And the people, you capture them at one moment in their life, and they go on and continue to live and then eventually die. And I'm almost 40. That was my first film. And this is the first experience I've had watching a film in which the people are no longer with us. It was especially moving for me.
And how close did you get to, say, Arnold Lustig or Jan Wiener, or also the family of Marla Olmsted?
Those are very different situations. I mean, Arnold and Jan remain in my mind as some of the most important figures that I ever was lucky enough to be exposed to. And watching the film today, I kept thinking, now it's been 10 years since that film was made, and so much of the lessons, it's a film about 2 very wise men. And so many of those lessons I've tried to aspire to in life with varying degrees of success. But, you know, you have to count yourself very lucky to meet people like that, especially when you're young. The Olmsted family I have a more complicated relationship with. But, you know, in each of these cases, what I like about documentaries is making documentaries brings up a lot of ethical questions. And it challenges you about what your values are. There is a lot of artifice around documentary filmmaking. It's a kind of a smoke and mirrors kind of thing. And so that always presents an interesting challenge in terms of your relationship with the subjects, because, you know, everybody wants to see themselves one way, and you may be showing them a different way. And then they also know that a year passed, but you turned it into 90 minutes, or 2 or 3 years passed, and you turned it into this short amount of time. So there's a certain amount of imposing a story, whether you're a documentary filmmaker or any kind of journalist, I think. And that makes it a complicated relationship with the people on whom you've imposed a story.
And now you are the chairman of the documentary jury, so how difficult do you find it to impose judgment upon other people's work?
Very easy. Now, just by virtue of showing your film here, you've already won on a certain level. But on a more real level, only one wins. No, I'm joking. The programming at this festival is fantastic. And we've only seen one day of films, but I'm really, really impressed and looking forward to seeing more. And, you know, winning is great, but it's not a race. You know, I mean, if you don't get a prize, it doesn't mean you lost. So I think you shouldn't pay attention too much to the competition aspect of it all.
And do you think there are some factors in documentaries that are very different from feature films, as in your role as a jury president?
That's an interesting question. I mean, what's funny is that documentaries always want to seem more like fiction films, and fiction films always want to seem more like documentaries. When you say, oh, that fiction film was so lifelike, it felt like a documentary, that's a compliment. But then if you make a documentary film, you borrow a lot of the tropes of narrative filmmaking. I think it's wrong for people to think one or the other is more real, I guess is what I'm saying. They're both just different modes of filmmaking, modes of storytelling. And it's sort of almost patronizing, I think, to think that, you know, documentary is the truth, or documentary is somehow more real. It's only real insofar as it taps into kind of eternal truths that narrative films can also tap into, and fiction can also, you know, literature, all kinds of art. All kinds of art can try and tap into that stuff.
And you have visited Cairo Vivari Film Festival 4 times. I believe you've also been to a number of other festivals. What do you think makes this one special?
I'll tell you, I'm glad you ask, because I feel very, very privileged to have been coming back to this film festival for quite some time now. And so I've seen it through different eyes, you know, the eyes of a young person, you know, partying all night, even before I had a film here. In the eyes of a person with films here, and now as a juror, and I brought my family. I have my daughter here with me, and walking here with my daughter and my wife, and seeing all this, you know, the corners where I, for instance, and my friends greeted the sunrise by drunkenly singing Tom Waits. It's really a great feeling, because, you know, it's especially poignant at this festival, because this festival does a wonderful job of creating a very genuine and meaningful experience for people who are coming from all different walks of life. You know, it's a world-class festival with celebrities and amazing parties and, you know, gala presentation. Yet it's also got a sense of like Woodstock or something. If you come here in the morning and you see all the Czech students who've been sleeping in sleeping bags in the rain underneath the ramp and things like that. The fact that those two experiences and so many in between coexist in one festival is very, very admirable. And, you know, that's unique to Carlo Vivari. You know, you have a lot of festivals that are very egalitarian, and you have a lot of festivals that are very high, upper class, but you have very few festivals that try to do both. And Carlo Vivari does it the best. And, you know, to have Carl Ach as the director, he's a guy who gets that spirit and who doesn't take celebrity too, you know, seriously, and is a real cinephile. And that's what this festival has always been about. We see fantastic films here. And yesterday was our first day as a jury, and we saw great movies, you know, and I got 10 more days of that, so I'm very excited.
And lastly, after your time here as jury president ends, do you have any projects that you're supposed to be working on later this year?
I'm directing my first fiction feature. It's about the acid trip in which Jerry Garcia's first marriage falls apart and the Grateful Dead are born. And I have a couple other projects I'm working on.
Sarah Borufka was talking there to the American filmmaker Amir Bar-Lev. We are now rounding up our regular weekday program with a rerun of Sound Czech, our Czech language learning program, brought to you by Jan Wellinger.
Bez hlavy a bez paty. Svět je jako pustá ulice. Ještě k tomu včera, pane.
Welcome to Sound Czech, in which listeners can learn about the Czech language through song lyrics. In today's edition, the simile jako zmoklá slepice, which translated literally means like a soaked hen. The phrase was used in a famous song called Strejček hlad, or Uncle Hunger. The original lyrics were written by the great Jan Verich and performed by Verich and Jiří Voskovec. The version here was recorded by Helena Vondráčková in the 1980s.
Život jak zmoklá slepice. Kdo ví,
kolik... Strejček hlad is basically about a vagrant severely down on his luck. His life is like that of a soaked hen. The words evoke the image of a miserable bird as a symbol of a pitiful existence. Today, vypadáš jako zmoklá slepice, you look like a soaked hen, is a phrase that you might hear as a teenager from your parents, or from teasing friends or workmates. What happened to you? Koukáš jako zmoklá slepice. You've got eyes like a soaked hen. In English, it would be similar to saying, you look glum, you look unhappy, and even, you look like a drowned rat. And of course, the closest equivalent, you look like a bedraggled hen. Poor little guy.
Mam život jak zmokla slepice.
When would you look so downcast? Maybe after failing an exam, or after coming under heavy criticism for something you messed up at work. Whenever something happens and you can only sit there watery-eyed, your head bowed. Another way of saying it would be Vypadáš schlíple, you look run down, or Chodíš jako bludná duše, you're walking like a wandering ghost, or my personal favorite, Vypadáš jako hromádka neštěstí, you look like a little pile of bad luck, or a little pile of misery. All these phrases, including Koukáš jako zmoklá slepice, you've got the expression of a soaked hen, I suppose are meant to get you to pick yourself back up, to drop the long face, to get it together again, despite the circumstances. Stop looking like a soaked bird. Poor little hen.
Jan Wellinger with Soundcheck was the final part of Radio Prague's English show for today. All our programs are available online at radio.cz. If you have any comments or questions for us, don't hesitate to get in touch. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.